True story. I put my hands on the entertainment center and I twerked for about a good 30 seconds. My wife got mad at me and said, pull your pants up.
I don't think you have to pull your pants down to twerk.
In my world, you do, sir.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. All right. Welcome to the Rated NA podcast, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode 130. We definitely did not plan this at the last minute, and no. that's not at all why Ash and I are here by ourselves.
Again.
But
I feel like you and I have bonded.
Yeah.
It's so lonely. It's so lonely here.
We sure have.
Rated NA. So originally we were going to record at our normal time on Saturday, and then I think what ended up happening?
I think the Xbox One happened, and everything got snafu'd from there.
Yeah, I think we were in the process of setting everything up and kind of in the thralls of our new toy.
I think Hillary actually had something to do that morning, and then Broadway Matt was returning from New York adventures.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, Matt was traveling, and Hillary was what, with family or something. So,
can we make that stick, Broadway Matt? Can I use that?
Broadway Matt?
Yeah, you know, because he's living large.
Yeah, he
NYC.
Is. He is. I imagined him with a kind of a themed dance sequence with shiny shoes walking down Broadway.
I like it. I'll take that.
Yeah. And perhaps the vacation hat as well that he wears when he goes.
Oh, yeah, vacation hat. Yeah. We need to talk to him about that.
Let's do the rundown.
Obviously, we are going to talk about the Xbox One today because both of us got it. And actually, before we do that, I'm going to clean up some of the final games that I played on the 360 before I made the Switch. We're going to talk about some relevant Xbox One and PS4 news items. Ash will also talk about Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. I'm watching the TV show Almost Human, which came out recently on Fox, and Ash saw Catching Fire.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Which is the new Jennifer Lawrence joint.
It is.
And then, of course, we'll have our NAFL update and then preview next week's episode. Sound good?
Sounds like a plan to me. I can't wait to talk about it.
Awesome. Do you mind if I start, since I'm going to kind of talk about some 360 games real quick?
No, please, by all means.
And that way we can go just ahead. Move on after that. So I was kind of closing out my summer game pile, which basically consisted of some games on the 360 that I had yet to finish before the Xbox One came out. So recently I played I Am Alive. Did you ever play that? It was like one of those arcade titles, Summer of Arcade, a couple of years ago.
No, I heard them talking about it on P2R.
And, yeah.
I'm talking about P2R. And
yeah, so our buddies over at Reset Transmission have also been playing I Am Alive. I believe Anna's been playing that with her brother, I think.
Mm.
It's interesting. It's not what I thought it was. First of all, I thought it was going to be a 2D side-scrolling platformer. So I was totally
did you really?
About that. Yeah. I didn't look at any of the concept art or any of the screens before buying this game because I just assumed that's what it was, especially since it was an arcade title too. And I think I picked it up on one of those super sales, like when one of those holiday sales for arcade titles. So anyways, I Am Alive is a third person in a 3D environment, which is crazy for a downloadable title. Sort of, I wouldn't call it like a survival adventure game. Like, it's very easy to make comparisons of this game to The Last of Us because it has that same like look and feel. Mm-hmm. But the core gameplay elements are really focused on there are levels with platforming. There's a little bit exploration, and then there's some weird combat mechanics, which I'll talk about in a second. But I thought it was really interesting. Like they did mention something on Reset Transmission that I noticed as well.
Is it the creepy child backpack?
Yes, is the child backpack. There is a point in the game, early in the game, you meet this child, and you ultimately decide to help this child like get back to find her mother or whatever. But at one point in the game, she climbs onto your back, like you carry her around. But mm-hmm. because it's an arcade title and there's not as much resources available, they really cut corners on the character animation by basically building a model where the child has no physics of her own.
Oh, really? So she's just like a stiff, like,
yeah,
like a taxidermied kid stapled to your back.
So the character does his normal running animation, and the child is just now on the back of the character model and like just moves with the back, you know, like in perfect unison, which makes it super creepy because she doesn't move.
So super gross.
Yeah. And I think it's weird. But the thing that kind of struck me is that it's I think it was developed by Ubisoft Shanghai. And so, like, because of that, it has some very, like, sort of Asian, Eastern gameplay elements. Like,
yeah.
There's no, the game is scored, you know, like, and it's, I think that's such an Eastern gameplay mechanic because it's like a survival kind of exploration adventure game, but they still find, like, a way to score.
Why
you.
Is there a scoring element?
Yeah. Like,
now, see, I actually read something about the production of this game and mm-hmm. it was a while ago, so I don't know how accurate it was, but, I read that this was going to be a full length title, but somewhere along the line, funding ran out. So they decided just to make it into an arcade title and use kind of like what they had built. So that's why it's probably not as polished as something you'd see from Ubisoft.
Yeah, I gotcha. I mean, if that's the case, and it had to be rushed and it had to be cut down from a full title to like an arcade title, it kind of to me feels like a game that I would have played on the PS2 and would have thought was really awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's not good these days, though.
Yeah, but it was like in that genre where all those games were coming out, where it was like, look, we have 3D environments and these characters are like running around and doing things, exploring 3D environments, like. It's just weird. And like there's a combat mechanic, but I played the game on like the hard difficulty setting. So
yeah, I heard the combat mechanic is more of like, it's almost psychological. Like you trick guys into, you know, putting their weapons down by drawing your gun and all sorts of like weird, you know, it's very different.
It's pretty much a game that you play with one bullet the whole time, and you have one bullet in your gun, and then you have a knife, like a machete that you can hit people with, but you can't like strike people with the machete. It goes into this like button mashing thing. But while you're doing that, if there's another enemy, they just come in and hack you down and kill you while you're fighting with somebody else. So really you need to kind of like trick everybody into one-on-one scenarios by like, you know, shooting the guy that has the gun, like surprise stabbing somebody else, and then like getting that last guy to drop his weapon because you're like pointing an empty gun at him.
See, actually, I like that, but it seems like that would be a great mechanic for like one scenario. You know what I mean? Right. Like repeating that process would almost get to be like rock, paper, scissors after a while. Like it almost seems like there's too many different hoops you have to jump through in order for that to be fun repeatedly.
Correct. The idea is that you're supposed to gauge how aggressive the gangs are, like as you encounter them. So if there's like two guys and they both pull guns on you at the same time, you're better off just like surprise killing one and just shooting the other and not even bothering with like trying to do like the hold up mechanic. But there is something that's kind of interesting that they added in. Like you could actually like point your gun at somebody and they put their arms up and they're like, hey man, everything's cool. And you can tell them to back up like towards a campfire, and then you can kick their body into the campfire or like off of a ledge. You know, like
that's kind of cool.
It's like the game. I feel like this game could end up being like a weird cult classic, you know, because of how bizarre it is.
Yeah, it does seem like there are a lot of really great ideas that were in a lot of ways just poorly implemented, you know, like it had potential to be this, because isn't there a lot of like, there's a lot of like parkour and like wall climbing and stuff too, right?
Yeah, it's not like parkour necessarily, but it's like kind of like puzzle climbing,
like scaling let me ask you this, in an apocalypse, why the fuck would you scale a building?
I don't know, like, but this guy can climb like a beast. I'll just say that.
Just a climber, huh?
The other thing that they attempted to do in this game is that they introduced a stamina mechanic. So anytime you run or climb, you have a stamina bar. The stamina bar goes down, and then if you deplete your stamina bar, you can kind of like go into like overdrive where you actually deplete the length of the stamina bar itself.
Oh, wow.
And in totally like Eastern game fashion, you pick up all this random scavenger loot. You're like, oh, a bottle of wine, you know, some a can of food, and then like the can of food replenishes your stamina bar, like stuff like that.
A used condom, a dirty boot, and a hair beret.
Yeah, it's like stuff like that. Anyways, I don't want to talk about the game too much, but it exists,
and it doesn't sound like you hated it. So
I actually didn't hate it. I finished the game, and like as I kind of got familiar with the game mechanics and sort of like the story of the game, I did find aspects of it fascinating, and I do play those like kind of climbing and exploration games. So that's that. And then pretty much the last game that I might end up playing on the 360, unless Stick of Truth is current gen only, mm-hmm. which I hope it's not. Is I played Fall of Cybertron Transformers.
Oh, did you beat that sucker?
I did, man.
Dude, the ending is so good.
It is, dude. I played that game in like 3 days.
Oh yeah,
like, the campaign.
It's so good. It has one of the best like dynamic campaigns where you jump between characters that I think I've played in a really long time.
Yeah, and I kind of just wanted to maybe like herald the efforts of High Moon Studios because I feel like they don't get a lot of love for what they do.
Seriously, they should be much, much more popular than they are. Not that their games don't sell well. They sell pretty well, but they should sell like gangbusters, you know, because that game is fucking great.
That gameplay, I mean, it's a linear like shooter, but like when it's Transformers and you can kind of create all these characters that feel slightly different from one another. And, you know, obviously some Transformers turn into jets, other ones turn into trucks and cars and stuff like that. And it all just kind of works.
God, the Grimlock level, though. Holy
it's
crap.
It's so gratifying. Yeah. It is so gratifying.
Biting other robots and tearing them to pieces is just great.
And they dangle that in front of you. The whole game is basically like a big tease for Grimlock. You know, you go through 10 or 11 stages and they're like, what happened to Grimlock? We don't know where he is. We can't find him, you know.
Or what about the level where you're the gigantic Decepticon? What the fuck's his name?
Oh, I don't know, because it wasn't the Constructicons in this game.
It wasn't the Constructicons. It was like...
It was the Combaticons, and they formed
into that giant, and you just totally wreak havoc. It's beautiful.
There's just so many different. They form Bruticus.
Yeah, that's right.
There Bruticus. You go.
Yeah,
even like the opening sequences with Optimus Prime and it wasn't Fortress Matrimus. It was Metroplex.
Yes, where he's calling down like the airstrikes and stuff.
And it's just so cool because the whole game is like it's fan service.
They even have like the closing credits are by the same guy who did the Transformers?
Stan Bush.
Yeah.
There's a Stan Bush track. It's actually like kind of like a remixed version of the Touch, is what they play during the credits. But like they also put all like lines from the movie into the narrative of the game. It's not necessarily the same scenarios.
I remember there's the one shall stand, one shall fall, that famous line.
Yeah, but I mean, they use even like smaller lines that the Dinobots use when they're on the planet of junk and they rescue Cub and Hot Rod from the Sharktacons. They use like those lines.
Ah, weep, grana, weep, ninny bomb?
That's not in it. I think that's actually in the first Transformers.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, the War for Cybertron. Like stuff like that is in these games. Really, I hope these guys continue to make Transformers games because they are phenomenal. They could make something.
I don't know
what they're
working on now. I know they're working on something big, something next gen, but I don't know what it is. Or current gen, sorry.
Yeah. It is just such a gratifying experience to like drive through an environment, bust out and transform and pull out your big cannon and like shoot a couple of guys and transform and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. So anyways, that's how I closed out my 360 experience. So
that's awesome.
So there you go. Awesome. Ash, well, what's going on with you? I mean, I have a pretty good idea, but why don't you tell everybody?
Well, so I got an Xbox One. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome. I guess, do you want to? Well, why don't we do the talk about exactly the setup process and stuff during the review section?
Okay.
But
you can tell us how your week's going.
Oh, so my week, it's going pretty well. I mean, like, I've been incredibly busy, just like work's been pretty brutal and stuff. But I've had a chance to play, you know, the Xbox One, get my hands on it, and really get a feel for a lot of the new features. And it's been super cool. So I've been spending a lot of time with that.
Yeah.
Been playing a bunch of Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, of course, for the Xbox One, which has been probably my favorite in the series, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Are you serious? We got to talk about that. We're going to talk about that.
It's phenomenal.
Okay.
And you know, like, honestly, I'm so just impressed with like the hardware itself that I feel like I made a really good purchase. So other than that, my week's been pretty cut and dry, man. It's just been, you know, a lot of work and nothing too exciting to report. Did like a house purge and threw out like, I don't know, a couple hundred pounds of trash from around my, not trash, but like old
satisfying?
Stuff. It is. Like, I had all these old, like, Entertainment Weeklies and just, like, stuff that I had been storing for years and years and years. And I just finally am like, you know what? Screw this.
What am I ever going to do with this?
Yeah, like, what am I going to do? So I just got rid of a bunch of old stuff, and we spent all day on Sunday just purging the house and moving stuff around. And, yeah, so it's been busy but fun. And, you know, I'm excited to play some new stuff.
Awesome. Well, speaking of new stuff...
News.
Let's talk. You want to talk a little bit about Xbox and PlayStation 4 sales? Pretty good. Both sold like a million units apiece, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when the pre-orders originally went up, the percentage of pre-orders, PlayStation 4 was absolutely destroying Xbox and pre-orders. And that's when Xbox did their, like, their marketing nightmare. You know, they came out and said all the wrong things and didn't bother correcting all the wrong things that they said. in a timely fashion, at least.
Sure.
So, but the latest things that I saw, that sales are, Xbox is only about 10% behind PlayStation 4, and they're expecting them to be kind of neck and neck by Christmas. They're expecting sales to be basically 100% equal by Christmas.
Isn't that amazing that for all of the PR shenanigans and like the quote unquote console wars and people arguing online, like it seems like everyone either bought one or the other or both and is pretty happy.
Yeah.
Like everything is fine.
It's exactly what I knew it was going to happen. And also I knew that word of mouth on the Xbox One was going to really drive early sales because I was watching. You know, I watch, like, granted, you know, our Twitter audience is probably a little bit biased, but I was watching everyone be so incredibly excited. Then I was watching people that didn't pre-order it asking, where the hell can I get it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want it now. And I think there is a lot of word-of-mouth sales that drive the market on these things because, you know, it's one thing to have, like, a marketing professional try and sway your opinion and get you to buy something.
Yeah.
It's another thing if there's people that you trust that are like, this is fun, you need to get it. That it's totally different. So once
people
actually got their hands on it and actually started playing it and being like, oh, okay, these features actually fucking work, then people were actually rushing out to try and buy it. And I think that's going to be happening all through the holidays as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And like, you know, in the interest of, like you said, of being full disclosure, we tend to be more in the sort of Xbox gaming realm. And I think a lot of our community, I think, tends to be in that same situation as well.
Well, for me, and the reason why is people always ask me this question, like, which do you prefer? And I honestly always enjoyed the exclusives that Xbox had more than the exclusives that PlayStation had. Like, I never really cared all that much for Killzone. I loved the Uncharted games, but I liked Gears of War and Halo more than I liked Killzone and Uncharted, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I am a Windows user, and I think even before I had an Xbox, I was actually earning achievements on games,
Games for Windows?
Yeah, they don't even have anymore. It's like defunct, but Games for Windows, like... is where I really started my PC gaming. Even before I got into like Steam, I was doing that. So,
yeah,
I'm just like, I'm kind of in the Microsoft ecosystem anyways. So for me, the Xbox is a logical choice. I don't really have a lot of business with Sony necessarily, or even really even Nintendo at this point. So,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't even really get too much of a chance to talk about because I mean, I did get a PlayStation 4.
Oh, right. Yeah. We had to.
You know, I figured I would get it eventually, so I just had some extra money from work, so I was like, "Fuck it, I'll get it now." Mm-hmm. And I'm not disappointed at all in my purchase, but you know, I do kind of feel as though as a day one purchase, I was more excited about the Xbox because of some of the bells and whistles that it shipped with. So we'll talk about that, I guess,
a little bit. Absolutely.
Let's talk about your games with gold because one of the things that Xbox implemented. Not too long ago was the free game with Games of Gold, which was awesome. Like if you have an Xbox Live Gold account, you get a free game or maybe even two games a month. And you had some extra news about that.
Yeah. The games have been a little hit and miss, but I'm appreciative of the things that have been offered. Like even if it's something that I've already owned or something I've already played, like I don't mind having it, you know, it's pretty cool. So at one point, they kind of said that the program would continue through December. And then the news came out that the program would be extended indefinitely. And then in the most recent news, in a tweet from November 14th, Major Nelson wrote that Xbox Live Gold Games with Gold is coming to the Xbox One, with details coming later in 2014.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. But the, let me read to you the exact wording of the tweet, because this is what I want to talk to you about. Okay?
Yeah.
Access to free games each month is coming for Xbox Live Gold members on Xbox One. Details coming later in 2014. What do you think access to free games means? Do you think that we will continue to get two free games that we keep? Or do you think it's going to go more to like a PS Plus model where as long as we remain Xbox Live Gold members, we will have access? See what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. It might be fancy wording.
Yeah, I mean,
I can see them taking your access away if you don't have a gold. Because, and I think that's what they're going to do. I think your detective work paid off.
I don't know that's maybe I'm not the first person to notice that, but you know, it would be on par with what Sony's doing now with PlayStation Plus.
Yeah,
and maybe, you know, the benefit of this might be that they are able to offer more current or like higher profile games. You know, because at this point, PS Plus was offering things like Kingdoms of Amalur and Vanquish and Battlefield 3 came out recently.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, over on the Xbox side, the free games this month were like A Kingdom for Keflings and Iron Brigade, which is a great Double Fine title, but it's an arcade title and it's pretty old at this point, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But it's still exciting news.
$5
you know?
A little while ago. Yeah, I mean, free anything is great. And, you know, I still have a lot of friends that complain that you have to pay for gold in order to get access to, like, multiplayer and things like that. Gold has never bothered me. I've always felt like it's a fun platform and a fun it's a fun way to play games with friends. And I'm definitely willing to pay whatever the heck it is that we pay, you know, to play.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the normal price is like $50 a year, but you know, if you keep an eye on Amazon, there's always like a special here and there. Like sometime in March or April, there's usually like a deal where you can get 12 months for $40. It's not exorbitantly expensive for what you get, you know, in return, and now you're going to get more, so hopefully you don't raise the price of gold, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the next bit of news that I wanted to talk about, I actually read this on Polygon today, and it's funny.
Is this, you know, about like, the nudes?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm glad you picked this one. This one's great.
Like, you give people this technology. The future of gaming is here. We're going to stream things. It's going to be fun, social, streaming.
And everyone shows their private parts.
Yeah, so apparently people found, like, realized that they could use the PlayStation 4 launch title, The Playroom, which is sort of like an interactive experience that uses the camera. And they realized that you could stream gameplay from that. But essentially that puts you on camera in front of like your Twitch audience, you know?
Ah, yeah.
So it's not like you're just streaming Battlefield or something. You're actually like streaming yourself on your camera. Whether or not you're playing the Playroom game or not is irrelevant at this point, because now you can apparently drop trow and do weird things. So
I wonder if you can hit those little robots with your penis.
I mean, the Kinect does not track such things, to my knowledge. So,
oh man, that's amazing. So I knew it was only a matter of time before, you know, either something perverted happened with the Kinect or the PlayStation Eye. So I knew it was going to happen soon.
It's just weird. I mean, like, there was also news today that Xbox was like temporarily banning people for swearing on their game upload clips.
See, that I don't necessarily agree with.
I mean, that's that's a gray area, right? You know, because it's like, who has access to that?
Yeah.
And
I can see disparaging comments, racist remarks, like, you know, misogynistic remarks. I can see all of that leading to somebody getting banned, but saying fuck a lot shouldn't really get you kicked. You know what I mean? It's just a word, but like saying like a horrible racist phrase or something, then yeah, I think that could be bad.
Yeah. It's going to be weird to figure out where that line should be established, you know, but, well, hey, that's what you get we're early adopters, right? We're like in the Wild West for the next few months, you know,
seriously,
this is all things that, you know, you couldn't plan for, or maybe you tried to plan for, but you never really know until the product gets out into the wild, and who the hell knows, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy. So the last thing that I wanted to mention, something I also read today. Did you ever use Turntable FM?
I never did.
Okay. It's shutting down on December 2nd. I don't know why. Maybe they just decided that, you know, maybe couldn't be profitable, or they couldn't figure out you know, where to lead this product in.
Isn't this
forward.
Where you, like, Ryan Clark and you guys would, like, spin music on there? Like, DJ? Like, you'd, like, yeah. faux DJ stuff? I did drop by those a couple times and just listen.
It's weird, you know, because I feel like there's, you know, Turntable FM is a website in which you can basically DJ your music in a virtual room and then have people, like, vote on whether or not they like what you're playing and, like, keep you up
great
there
concept.
Or kick you out.
It's a great concept.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on paper, it's an amazing idea, but I really felt like there ended up being two types of Turntable FM rooms. You know, the one that, like, Matt and I would run with our friends, and then our friends would show up, and we'd just listen to music and chat. And then there were rooms, a free-for-all, and there would be 100 people in the room, and everyone would fight for a spot on the turntable, you know, because there was only four or five at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then what really killed everybody was that there was a point system. So the more people that upvoted your songs would give you points. And then the more points you got would allow you to use, like, different avatars. The thing that made this thing weird is that everybody was dressed like a furry. You know what I mean? Like, there was, like, weird, like, alien costumes, panda bear suits. I don't know. Just, like...
It was weird, yeah.
Weird skins and stuff. The interface was still, like, 640 by 480, so it looked like it came
right
out
of... Yeah, I remember the interface, like, being fucking god-awful.
It
this
was
about
like, not
years
scalable.
Ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was weird, that something that at one time was so enormously popular would just shut down. You know what I mean? Like, MySpace is still running, but Turntable is shutting down. You know, like, yeah.
Must just not have the funding, you know?
Yeah, so...
Sad.
Now everyone can get back onto BuzzFeed and waste their time there instead of Turntable FM. Okay, Ash, let's unbox our thoughts on the Xbox One.
Seriously.
Like what I did there?
Yes. So I have to say, I was more excited waiting for UPS for this thing than I had been in a really long time. And true story, as soon as I saw the UPS truck pull up, I was sitting on the couch with my wife, and I was already in my pajamas because it was fucking late. Mine didn't come till late.
Yeah.
And true story, I put my hands on the entertainment center and I twerked for about a good 30 seconds. My wife got mad at me and said, pull your pants up.
I don't think you have to pull your pants down to twerk.
In my world, you do, sir.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Especially when you have an Xbox One being delivered to your house.
Fair enough. Hey, did the UPS driver drop the box out of the truck like he did for me?
No.
Oh, good.
But he looked like he was so fucking exhausted. He was like dripping with sweat and just like so disheveled, and I felt bad for him. So,
I'm pretty sure the shipping weight on those boxes was about 20 pounds.
Yeah. Honestly, that was a heavy
UPS
box.
Was delivering 20-pound boxes all day. I'm sure that was a fantastic day for them.
Yeah. So let's talk through the setup woes first before we get into the stuff. For me, I realized that it didn't, like, I kind of had the same problem as you in that it didn't really fit anywhere on my shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided at this point I would just have to remove the 360 from my entertainment center for a while and move it to a TV in another room because there just wasn't any space.
Yeah,
so,
it's crazy.
So I had to move all my stuff around, rewire everything, hook up the cable box pass through, you know, have HDMI in and out. So mm-hmm. I went with that. And then finally everything was actually set up and had the new Kinect set up. And then we'll talk about the actual software set up in a second because I had some severe problems. But let's talk about yours first.
Okay, so like I said, I'm pretty sure I didn't get full visual confirmation on this, but I really think it really looked like the UPS driver basically was at waist height and kind of was getting stuff out of the truck and then just kind of maybe set onto the ground my box. Did you just drop that from like a foot, 2 feet? I couldn't tell. I knew it was on the street at one point. I was standing outside my door. I would have just walked up and taken it from him. You know,
so you were eager as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was, like, waiting the whole time.
Did you twerk at all?
I didn't twerk. My dog goes crazy anytime UPS shows up, so I got, like, early alarm warnings, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyways, I got it in. Luckily, the box didn't have damage that was upsetting or anything. So, you know, here's the thing. Like, the way my place is set up is that I use an old credenza to put my TV on, right? So I don't have, like, shelves underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically have things littered around the credenza, like around the TV. The Xbox One is comically large, as everybody now knows. And so basically I had to grab like an end table and set that next to the TV. And it all looks right and everything. But so I set it up. I get the Kinect hooked up. I hook in the power supply. And then I grab the HDMI cable, plug it into the Xbox, and I go to run it to the stereo receiver that I have.
Oh, boy.
Half a foot short.
Oh, fuck.
And I'm just, like, standing there. I can't move the table anymore. I can't move the Xbox anymore. I can't move the receiver because everything's, like, 200 wires coming out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, literally, I had to order, like, a longer HDMI cable because I just couldn't find a place to put this damn thing. So my primary experience using this thing was Friday night. And then on Saturday, I, like, put everything back the way I wanted it and just kind of waited for the cable to show up today. But what are you going to do, you know? So,
yeah.
You know, let's move on to the setup. You said you had trouble setting up the machine. Oh my God. So what happened?
Yeah, so it was okay, so the patching was not really a problem that I was aware of.
Like 10-15 minutes, right? No big deal.
Yeah, well that went really well, but what I realized is that after you patch, it's supposed to more like turn itself off and then turn itself back on.
Oh.
But for some reason mine didn't do that. So mine patched and everything said it was fine and everything from a software standpoint, was working okay. I was able to reinstall Netflix and reinstall Hulu. And the thing that was genius is it hooked up to my Xbox Live account in like 1 second, more or less. I just put my username in, and it already had like my Netflix and my Netflix password, and all of that was already queued up and ready to go.
Oh, okay? Yeah, Netflix and Hulu Plus transferred accounts right over. It was amazing.
And I didn't have to reinitialize them or like say that, you know, this is a new machine for my Netflix account to work on. Mm-hmm. Everything was right there and ready to go with like all the, you know, recently watched and everything just all queued up and ready to go. So that was awesome. The HDMI pass-through worked really great. You just say Xbox TV and it accesses your cable box and actually changes the channel on your cable box.
So all the blaster stuff worked out well, right? Like blasts like, the commands over and it all works?
Yeah, it works very, very well. I mean, you can literally say, you know, you go Xbox TV, it'll switch to your TV stations, and then you can just start naming channels. You'd be like Xbox MTV2, and it'll go to MTV2 or whatever you want to do. It's kind of crazy. And so all that worked well. And then I was like, okay, well, now I'm going to play a game. So I go to put a game in, but I guess something hadn't patched correctly. And so I put in Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag and went to the install. And whenever I clicked install, it would just like make like a beeping sound.
Oh, but then
progress bar wouldn't ever move. And so I couldn't play the game and I couldn't install the game. And it basically just sat on the install menu with no progress ever happening. And I was just like, what is happening? And so I mean, I was like kind of desperate. I went online. I was looking up like, what am I doing wrong? I'm like, where is it on the menu to install this? And, you know, I find out where it was supposed to be, but there was no like progress bar moving. I was like, this is fucking weird. So I rebooted the system like twice. Still nothing. It wouldn't work. I'm like, this is fucking crazy.
Oh, shit.
I unplugged it, let it sit for like 30 seconds, plugged it back in, and lo and behold, everything worked fine.
Well, like, that's so weird, man.
Yeah. So it was something, I guess something to do with maybe flash memory or...
Well, I can tell you what.
Yeah, it was weird.
You know how you talked about that update and like how it was supposed to reboot and it didn't?
Yeah.
For me, that was like an uncomfortable 5 minutes. Like I just basically left it. And you're right. The machine runs the update and then it looks like it turns off or maybe it's not turned off and we're waiting for it to come back on.
But it doesn't do anything either.
Yeah. I literally just sat there, no lights, nothing on the TV, no lights on the Kinect or the Xbox. And I was like, am I supposed to turn it back on? Is it rebooting? What happened? And like eventually it actually does come back on, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But there's no indication to tell you like what's going
on. It felt really dicey, right? I felt like really uncomfortable, like I was going to like brick my machine the whole night. I'm like, I'm gonna fucking brick this thing
on day one.
Yeah, in the first night, because I'm like, there's no, it's so new that there's no like walkthroughs or anything. And I'm a relatively computer savvy person.
Right.
Like, you know,
right.
I used to build my old PCs back in the day and everything. It just felt very foreign. And like, I didn't understand what I was really supposed to do next. And like, mm-hmm. it's the first time I installed the game. And so I didn't realize that like when you install a game like Assassin's Creed, it's going to take a bit longer than it did on the 360.
Yeah.
Like
so
actual installation of a game, it took like, you know, maybe 5-10 minutes to install it. It was kind
were
of
you
a,
able to start playing while it was still installing.
And that was the other thing. So it finally got to, I want to say about 15%. And then I was actually able to start playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool,
which is really cool. And so anyway, once everything was actually set up, I was very, very happy with the machine. But that first like 5 hours, I was fucking terrified, man.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I'm like, I'm breaking this. I don't know what's going on. It's not working, but it worked.
Let me ask you a question about the main interface, because the first thing that I noticed is that it feels very sparse. And I don't know, like, I guess I'm used to looking at a zillion tiles on like 7 or 8 different screens, you know, on the 360.
I think the same thing happened with the PS4 though. It's so new and there's so much they haven't brought over from Xbox for the 360 yet. So they don't have like a library of titles or demos or anything for you to really look through. And a lot of the apps don't exist yet either on there. So I mean, things like HBO Go and everything, they're not even on the Xbox One yet. So I think it's going to take a good like 4 or 5 months to have it feel very populated.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. Like, I don't even know if you can set a background image like you could on the 360.
Have you tried the snapping yet?
I did. I did try to snap a couple of things, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I'm impressed with how well the interface works and how little lag time there is.
Did you just kind of start playing Assassin's Creed? Did you try anything else in any of the other, like, apps or features or anything like that?
Well, I mean, just the standard apps, like I did, you know, not the TV is an app, but I did the TV, I did Hulu, I did Netflix, I did a couple of the other like standard apps. But I went straight to Assassin's Creed 4 because I was really looking for a narrative-driven game and like a more of an adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
I had just beaten Killzone. And like the idea of shooting anything at that point, I just couldn't. I couldn't shoot stuff. Like,
yeah, fair enough.
Shoot stuff. I was like, I can't shoot things for a while. But Battlefield will be next on the list, and I'm eager to play that.
So. Did you try Killer Instinct at all?
No. Actually, I did not.
I gave it a shot. It's weird, you know, because it's like just a fighting game. And
yeah.
There's not even. I don't think there is like a narrative mode in the game. There's not like a campaign or like whatever you call it in a fighting game.
Fighting against bots, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't go online because I'm like not good at Killer Instinct, but
yeah,
there's basically like a dojo where you can learn how to play, like an endurance mode, I guess, is like the main mode where you like, it's called survival or something, and you basically try to defeat as many enemies as possible where you only get like a little bit of health back in between each fight, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, I don't know, there's online, and then I don't know what else. It's cool. You know, Killer Instinct is fun, and it's cool, but again, it just feels like there's something lacking. It doesn't feel, like, lively. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's okay. It's fun. Killer Instinct is a good game, and it still plays like Killer Instinct. But, you know, I guess I just expected there to be more.
My general problem with fighting games is, like, I get very excited for them, and I love them, but I can never progress to a point where I'm comfortable playing with other people online because everyone online is just so fucking good.
Yeah.
You're kind of stuck playing against the computer and it just gets boring very quickly.
Unless they do like some matchmaking or something. I don't know. I just feel like you're always going to get your ass handed to you when you fight online because the people that are playing online probably spent a lot of time just playing Killer Instinct.
Absolutely.
Anyways, let's talk a little bit about Assassin's Creed 4 since that's one of the big things you waited to play it.
I waited for next gen because for me it felt like if I knew it was coming out for next gen, I felt like I'd be doing myself a disservice to play it on a 360 because I knew it would look pretty and it looks absolutely gorgeous on the Xbox One. I loved the naval battles in Assassin's Creed 3. That was actually my favorite part of the whole game in Assassin's Creed 3.
I think a lot of people felt that way.
Yeah, and they did a great thing. They made a vast open world that you can explore by ship, and your ship is fully upgradable with a variety of bells and whistles. You can, you know, change the color of your sails and change the aesthetics of your ship as well.
Is it like the Wind Waker, you know, like Zelda?
Yeah, it's like, it is. It's a lot like that, actually.
That's so funny. That just occurred to me. I don't know why.
It's totally like that. You go from island to island, and each island that you explore will have like a, you know, some of them are, you know, controlled like by their plantations that are controlled by slavers. Mm-hmm. And you can go and like, you know, loot the storage sheds there. And some of them are smugglers' coves where you'll go and you'll have to sneak in as a thief and rob these chests. And some of them are like whole islands, like, you know, Tortuga and stuff, where you'll go and there'll be a variety of mini quests and things on the islands. So the thing that I guess really separates the maps, other than, you know, having go anywhere anytime you want, is the fact that there's no like massive city. There's no massive cities that were so you instead have you know, a variety of smaller cities. I mean, there's still big enough. You don't want to like just go running around them. But they're, I mean, it's awesome. Like in terms of, well, what parts of it do you want to know? Let's do kind of an interviewee thing with this.
Because I want to get I have a beef with this game, and I just want to get the beef out of the way, and then we can talk about the game itself. Okay.
Okay.
What does this have to do at all with being an assassin and then like the narrative of the previous games?
Okay,
because that's my beef. They could have just called this, you know, pirate game : Black Flag, and everybody would have been cool with it, you know.
Well, so it definitely takes place in the universe. It definitely has ties to the end of Assassin's Creed 3, and I don't want to spoil the end of Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah, that's fine.
But the events that occur at the end of Assassin's Creed 3 definitely do have repercussions in this game.
But that was a prequel, right? I thought this occurred before 4 came before 3, does it not?
No.
What?
And you will find out exactly. Well, in terms of the character you're playing was Kenway. Kenway is the father of Haytham. That's not even a spoiler. That's just whatever. So Kenway is the father of Haytham.
But it's not a prequel, is what you're trying to say.
In the main timeline, this definitely takes place after. So I'm so confused now. Real timeline.
Yeah.
Like the future timeline. This takes place after the future timeline, but you're exploring the events that happened prior to Connor's existence.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got it.
You kind of flash back a little bit further in before you meet Kenway, Connor and Haytham.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my perception of this game is that I feel like I'm not following the Creed anymore. You know, like I'm just killing people.
Well, I think that's the one thing that, and they've been saying this in press a lot too, so I'm not going to spoil anything, but the thing that is wonderful about this game is that you are, at least at the point that I'm at in the game, you are neither Templar nor Assassin.
So what does this game have to do with Assassin's Creed?
You're in the world.
Okay, sure.
World where there are Assassins and Templars, but you're kind of witnessing their world from an outsider's perspective, which is kind of nice because it's a very neutral standpoint. Right. And so you get to see the world of Assassin's Creed from someone who doesn't give a fuck about Assassin's Creed, like someone, you know, or someone doesn't Templars or Assassins. He has his own moral code, you know, and of course, his story does tie in very, very heavily with that world. He's not just like, a hobo on the side of the street. But I think it's actually a very welcome way of looking at it, because I felt like those games, especially 3, became very preachy and very just kind of like up their own ass with their mythology. And this is a way of examining it in a very fresh way, which I thought was really nice.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So let's talk about like the actual gameplay now that I've kind of understand what's going on with the narrative.
I'm trying to say stuff about the narrative without spoiling too much.
No, so. That's cool. I mean, like, I kind of understand. Like, I was confused about what the Assassin's part was in Assassin's Creed Black Flag, but
yes.
But let's focus on the gameplay. Let me assume for a moment that this game is just called Pirate's Creed.
Okay.
Okay. So you said that the naval battles from Assassin's Creed 3 were very popular.
Yeah.
And now they've kind of like taken the ball and run with that in this new game. So am I to assume that like a majority of the game like is focused on the naval combat, or is there still?
I wouldn't say majority. I mean, you still spend a lot of time on land. There's still, you know, puzzles to do and like a lot of people to assassinate. That kind of comes along with the territory.
Is it still like collect-y?
It's not as bad. And honestly, one of the things they did that was kind of genius about the collecting. I kind of felt like the collecting in the past with the feathers. There's no feathers in this game, thank God. Oh yeah, there's still a ton of stuff. But one of the cool things that they did was, while you're sailing, your crew can sing pirate shanties. And one of the collectibles are different pirate shanties. So you'll have to chase them down, kind of like you did with notes in the past game. So you'll actually have to chase down the shanties, and then once you grab the shanty, then your crew can sing it. And it's awesome, like in the being in the middle of a storm, and like having your crew, you know, chanting a shanty like in the middle of like a, you know, a crazy typhoon is just really, really immersive and really, really rich. It's so much fun.
That's pretty cool.
It actually made, you know, the collectibles worth collecting. You want to find them as opposed to, you know, having it be like a list of chores that you have to accomplish.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about the previous game, is that it's like, man, I got to hunt these animals. Oh, let me ask you this. Is there like a weird text-based metagame? Like, you know how you had like the Brotherhood and the...
There is. This one is, I believe it's a lot easier to manage. What you can do is when you are at sea and you take down an enemy ship, you have a couple options of what you can do to it. First of all, you can board it and like battle the crew on the deck. And if you wipe out the crew on the deck, you can salvage the ship and use it to repair your own ship, so kind of break it down for wood, or you can actually repair it and then send it off to your fleet. And so as you progress through the game, you'll actually build this massive fleet of ships. Now, you don't get to pilot all those ships, but what you can do is send them on missions, like you could send your assassins on missions in the past games.
Right.
So you can send them on mini missions. So you'll actually want to try and capture some of the larger ships, because they'll be much more successful at completing the additional missions.
Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah, and those can get you like more money, and sometimes they can get you special costumes and rewards and stuff like that. So building your own fleet is a big part of it.
Okay, so there was, I think I saw like in one of the cinematic trailers for this game, there was like some swimming, and maybe he like punched a shark or something. So what is that all about?
Well, So there's a couple different parts that I guess have raised some controversy. Like Pino went after this game because one of the elements of the game is like hunting large creatures in the water. So
there's like a little bit of whaling, right?
It could be whales. It could be sharks. You know, whatever. You basically get in a canoe and then you hunt down different sea creatures with a harpoon, and then you take their skins and bones and you sell them.
This is optional gameplay though, right? Like you don't have to do that.
Yeah, you don't have to go harpooning. You know, different stuff unlocks for you if you do, like different costumes and everything like that. And you can use that as a source of income. Like if you want to be like a horrible whaler, you can go out and just collect like whale bones and make a living on that, you know.
Yeah, you didn't necessarily have to hunt in Assassin's Creed 3 either. I think they just kind of showed it to you. Yeah. And you could have ignored it for the rest of the game.
There's a hunting aspect to this as well. They don't go into in depth like at all, because it was a bit much, let's be honest. Like
I finished it too. I finished all the hunting quests, and that was a pain in the ass.
Fucking traps and like, oh my God, it was nuts in Assassin's Creed 3. This is just like they'll give an indicator when you get to a new area of like what wildlife exists in that area, whether it be like crocodiles or, you know, monkeys of some sort. Mm-hmm. And you can just go up and kill them. You could like honestly shoot a monkey out of a tree and skin it. Like it's
okay.
And then it'll be like, you need 2 monkey pelts to make like a new gun holster. That's it. That's the whole crafting system.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
Simple it is, man. Like it's just like, oh, I need 2 crocodile pelts to make a new gun holster.
It seems like Assassin's Creed is a series that like expands and contracts. You know what I mean? Add weird gameplay mechanics, and then people are like, this is too complicated. And then they kind of like scale it back down again.
No, absolutely. And in terms of them scaling things back, one of the things that I really appreciate is they went ahead and gave Edward regenerating health. So you don't have to go and buy health from, you know, plague doctors. Not that they would exist in this time period anyway, but from doctors anymore. You don't have to carry health packs. You just have to get into a point where you're not aggroed anymore.
Yeah.
And then your health will slowly creep back. So it's one less thing to manage. And I really feel like the reason why regenerating health was created as a mechanic in the first place is it removes repetition. Like if every time you got in a fight and you lost health, you're constantly be backtracking to buy health from somebody.
Yeah.
So it's stupid and it doesn't really do anything except for slow the game down.
Yeah. Which is like you said, like as soon as you get out of the conflict, then you just assume that if this were like real life, you just assume that he spent some time healing
and exactly.
went back right. to the mission. Right. Yeah.
And you know, and I think we've gotten to a point where we don't want this game to be like super, super realistic. Like, and another thing that they made a little bit easier this time is you don't have to tear down wanted posters anymore. Basically, your enemies have like an aggro range, and if you break out of that aggro range and you stay out of combat for a while without being seen, and if you get hidden, your wanted level will drop down to zero again.
That's good.
Yeah.
This is kind of a game that like tries to balance fun gameplay with like tedium. It like walks that line, you know, where it's like they want to give you stuff to do. They want to immerse you in experience. But like sometimes it goes too far and you're like, oh, my God, this is just tedious. Like I want to get back to the story, that kind of thing.
No, yeah, I agree. And, you know, and in terms of the story, it's a little bit light right now. Like there's not as much depth to this story as I feel as there was in Assassin's Creed 3. I feel like he like tried to get very like it was a very deep and kind of a dark story. And part of that, I think, might have been Connor's personality.
Yeah.
This is a lot more lighthearted.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a lot more lighthearted. It's a lot more...
Oh, because Connor, yeah. Connor was very kind of like...
He was a bit depressed.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't, like, inspiring. Because he was always kind of, like, very kind of, like, even-tempered. Like, almost, like, on... Like, he's always, like, focused on the mission.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, he was like, kind of worried about the genocide of his people.
Yeah, but I mean, like it was very heavy. Maybe that's the word I was looking for. No. He was a very heavy character.
This is definitely lighthearted. There's a lot of like, you know, drinking. There's a lot of like, you know, a lot of great pirates from history are all in it at the same time. So you have, you know, Calico Jack and Blackbeard all hanging out on the same port, which they did. And so you get to kind of be part of this really interesting part in history where there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of evil going on. There's a lot of tyranny, but there's also like these group of guys that are trying to create their own society. That's it feels like anarchy, but at the same time, they just want to be free from like the tyranny of big government and from oppression. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, it has a kind of a neat message underlying the story as well. So
cool. Any final thoughts? I'm assuming the combat is largely the same as it has been, right?
Yeah, combat's pretty much the same. Counters and everything are all the same. I feel like it's a lot harder to die in this. Maybe I've just gotten better at Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, that's safe to say. I think that's fair.
Yeah, but I do have to say the ship combat, one of the most satisfying things like in a game in a long time, you know, because you build the ship up, you do feel very close to the ship as time progresses. Mm-hmm. And getting an enemy ship down to low health and then actually throwing, you know, grappling hooks and having all your men like charge and jump overboard and like jump onto the enemy ship and then having your whole crew on the ship's deck just fighting is fucking great.
Highly satisfying.
Yeah, awesome. So much fun.
Let me ask you one last question. Your crew, are they like people you get to know?
Your quartermaster, yes. Okay. You kind of meet him early in the game and he's a big, you know, close ally of yours. And then you'll have other like guests on board your ship that are part of the story. So for instance, like, you know, like Calico Jack or somebody will hop on board and be talking to you for part of the story. The rest of the crew are, mainly a statistic. So like you can lose crew in battle and crew gets down to zero. You pretty much die.
Okay.
And you can do other things to gain crew. So when you board enemy ships, you can recruit from the people you board. You can buy them from the shore. Like if you can go to bars and recruit them, and you can even find survivors like floating in the water, like on little rafts, and recruit them into your crew. So
this kind of sounds like Sid Meier's Pirates a little bit.
Scott, it is.
I knew it. Okay.
It is. It really is. So because I used to play the fuck out of Sid Meier's Pirates, I love.
And like even the gameplay mechanic of the ship combat is so similar to like, you know, how you fire and how you have to utilize the the wind in order to get the best angle on your enemies. And like there's so many pirates that are part of the naval combat, and even like a lot of the micromanaging from Sid Meier's Pirates exists in this as well. So like when you kill an enemy ship, you get salvage and you go to shore and you sell like, you know, the steel and the wood and the rum and trade. And dude, it's so much fun.
It makes so much more sense to me now. I actually have a copy of Sid Meier's Pirates for Commodore 64, I think.
Man,
what do you think about that? Pretty cool.
That's definitely frameable. So Scott, let's talk about cyborgs. We'll shift things up a bit.
Yeah, why don't we talk about robots? I like to do that.
Let's talk about robots with creepy eyes.
Yeah. So, okay. So I started watching a show that I was really excited for on Fox called Almost Human. It is J.H. Wyman, I think, is the producer, and it's executive produced by J.J. Abrams. So I was very excited for this, especially after losing Fringe last year. So I kind of need something to fill the void. And while Revolution has done that handily, Revolution is not necessarily a sci-fi adventure. So enter Almost Human, which is basically a cop drama at the end of the day. But it brings in sort of this aspect of cybernetic beings and then raises like a lot of ethical kind of questions. And it actually has a good bit of humor too.
Our listeners should know that this is pretty much what you have your PhD in.
Yeah.
It's like, isn't it man's relationship with machines?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So,
okay. So this is like really, this is in your wheelhouse, so to speak.
Yeah. Let me. Okay. So just to set up sort of the way that the plot works is that, like in the pilot, the main character whose name I can't remember, but he's Bones in Star Trek. He is like in this raid, and like he gets shot up in the raid. So he's like out of commission for a period of time. And so when he comes back, he re-enters the force, and this is like in the future. So in this like futuristic police force, all of the detectives are paired with robot cops.
Okay.
And they are sort of like emotionless, kind of like you remember in iRobot with Will Smith and the robots.
Yeah.
And he's like, don't, you know, rescue the girl. Don't rescue me. You know, that kind of thing. And they're like, oh, you know, we based on the statistics, we thought it you would have a higher chance of survival, blah, blah, blah. That's what those robots are like.
Mm-hmm.
By the books, computational, whatever. So this guy enters back into the force and they're like, well, we don't have any standard issue robots, so we're going to give you an older model. And this older model was a robot that was supposed to be more human-like and have more sort of like emotions or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have sort of shades of human and robot, which bring up a lot of interesting questions about like what does it mean to be human, you know, because the main character, when he re-enters the force, he has his leg had to be replaced with like a synthetic leg, you know, so he's got part, you know, he's now part robot as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this like robot partner is supposed to be like a reject robot who is like has emotions and stuff like that. And then there's also like a fleet of these like standard issue, you know, cold calculating like robot cops, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just cool because the series, you know, while it is just like, you know, solving the crime every week, they just raise a lot of interesting questions about like man's relationship with robot. You know, the pilot basically sets up the narrative, and then the second episode is like a crime that revolves around like sex robots. They go into like some of the ethics of that and like companionship, like what does it mean, that kind of thing, you know.
That's really cool.
It's gorgeous too.
How's the tech in it?
I mean, it's like so far in these first two episodes, like there is a budget there. And I kind of commented to my wife as we were watching it. I was like, this is amazing if they can keep this up, because they need to maintain this sort of appearance that everything is set in the future. So whether that's through like, you know, CG effects or shooting around buildings that appear to be more modern, you know, like everything is like black, white and silver in the future, you know, so mm-hmm. you need to like find sets and find things that look that way. You need to come up with like different ideas for tech that might exist in the future. So it's kind of like very fascinating. And the first two episodes like don't disappoint at all, you know?
That's awesome. I'll definitely add it to the queue.
Yeah, there's a like in the second episode, like right at the beginning, the there's a couple of bad guys and in order to subvert security cameras, they like spray something on their faces. It looks like hairspray. But when they show up on camera, it's almost as if all the light is being reflected off of their face. So their faces are like obscured by like this disco ball effect. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So like if, as long as this show can keep coming up with like cool ideas for tech and keep it like, keep this like sense of the future realistic in the eyes of the viewer, I think it'll be good. And I think that if anyone has, you know, even like a passing interest on the like relationships between humans and robots, like if that's what you like about The Terminator, or if that's what you liked about Sarah Connor Chronicles, where, you know, they raised a lot of issues about like consciousness and machines and stuff like that, Almost Human will scratch that itch. And so far it is not disappointed. I find it to be highly entertaining.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Well, definitely.
And the last thing I'll say is that the guy that plays the partner, the sort of like the robot that has the emotion or whatever, like he's really good. Like,
oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, and they introduce some comedy into the show, and he like carries it very well. Like he does a good job of playing like this synthetic with emotions. Like he does a good job of like being that character. So I think the strength of the show so far is really good. So I think it's one worth watching, sticking with.
Cool.
Nice. So in our last review, you saw Catching Fire. Which is
the second
movie of the Hunger Games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go too in depth about it because it's hard to kind of talk about this movie without spoiling anything. So, you know, I loved Catching Fire. There's a lot of really great twists in Catching Fire.
It was a weird story. Like the story was really kind of strange. So I was interested. I'm interested to hear from you how the narrative translates to like another medium being film, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you read the book starts out pretty slow.
Yeah.
And the movie's the same way. There's a lot of buildup. I would say over half of the film actually is buildup. There's just a lot of dialogue, a lot of quiet moments, a lot of like character driven moments.
The book's kind of that way too, right?
Yeah. And if you like the characters, you'll probably enjoy those moments. Like, you know, you get to really spend a little bit more time with Katniss and like get to see kind of what she's experiencing and see her like moral dilemma. Like, you know, what's important to her is, you know, the freedom of everyone important, or does she want, you know, her close friends and family to be safe? And so she has a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course you get to see like the kind of inner workings of this like tyrannical, terrible, you know, government who's just manipulating and controlling everyone. So I thought that was really fascinating as well. I love like the world they created in the Hunger Games. I love the idea of the districts, and I love how they use the games as a form of social control. I thought mm-hmm. I think the concept is just awesome.
It's like they pulled those in the villages and the districts. They pulled those enforcers like straight out of THX 1138,
right?
Which I thought was really cool. You know, like
yeah,
absolutely. I always like that aspect of it.
Yeah, and you get to see those guys in action a little bit more this time. And then the second half introduces a whole new a new slew of characters, which I thought were really awesome. And the standout for me, I don't know if our listeners know much about Jenna Malone, but she was in like Donnie Darko and a lot of movies in like the early 2000s. She kind of pops back up in this movie, and her character is fucking awesome.
Yeah, she was on Fallon recently. She is an interesting person, and her character seems like kind of like embodies like some of her spirit, I think, a little bit.
It's awesome. I think I recorded Fallon, so I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, but, sure.
But yeah, so Jenna Malone was awesome, and you know, I think the whole cast did a great job this time. The second half is much more action packed, and it has a hell of a fucking cliffhanger. So definitely go check it out. I mean, there's some super cool action sequences. I think everyone would like this, even if like you're not a big fan of the first film. I think it's definitely worth checking out.
I mean, I can't tell you enough. Like, I started reading the books when I found out they were going to become movies.
Uh-huh.
And like the whole time I read this second book, I was just like, I have no idea how they're going to do this. Well, if they can make this into a film and if it works, like I'm in, I guess, you know, like it sounds crazy.
No, there are definitely some crazy scenes.
Yeah, all right.
You're kind of like, is this fantasy or is it reality? But it works. It all works, you know?
Cool. I'm into it. I heard it was kind of an emotional journey and like a pretty good film. It seems like the consensus has been pretty positive for this film.
This movie could have been fucking shit.
Yeah.
But Jennifer Lawrence is a great actress, and actually the whole cast is just it's very well cast. Like every character from Haymitch to like Effie, they're all great actors. Mm-hmm. So it makes like this silly, what could have been a silly YA story, really good. Like if they would have cast it with some like bullshit, like, you know, CW actress, it would have been done. Like it would have been unwatchable. But she really kind of carries the whole franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was fortunate of whoever put this movie together to get Jennifer Lawrence, you know, who is now, an award winner. So like now it's like a golden, completely golden. And on top of being a very popular book series, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like all the, you know, they have all the right pieces in place. So I'm excited. I want to see it. I do want to see it.
Cool. You're going to have to get over your fear of theaters.
I know. I still haven't seen Gravity and Ender's Game, you know, so it's just like,
I haven't seen either one of those either, man. I'm behind.
Yeah. Movie marathon. We got to make it happen.
Let's do it.
This is Courtney Draper, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
Okay, let's take a look at how things are going in our Nerd Appropriate Fantasy Football League.
Ike. From now on.
There you go. Yeah, that term is appropriate for this segment.
Okay.
Awesome. So, like, as I anticipated, all of my shit talking over the past couple of weeks has finally caught up with me. I have dropped down to third place. Rex's Warriors is back in first place. Nate's team, the fifth team, is in second place. And Beholder the Glory, Karen Weeks, is in fourth place, and she's dropping. I don't know if she's managing the team anymore, but I don't fault her for that. But Dwyer Straits has risen from the ashes, who was in last place just a few weeks ago.
What?
Is beating the likes of our buddy Ryan, the Pecan Sandys, who we had on last week. And Hulk Smash, which is Matt, who is unfortunately now in eighth place.
Jeez.
I know, it's brutal. When you have eight teams, like, it's very volatile. And like, you know, when we talked to Sean last week, basically there were only two records in the team, 6-4 and 4-6. So now everything's getting shook up. Sadly, I am playing the Pecan Sandys this week, and I'm clearly going to lose. So I think by the time Monday rolls around, or by the time Tuesday or Wednesday rolls around, I'm probably going to fall further, unfortunately. But congratulations. I will congratulate. I will be the bigger man. I will congratulate Sean Baptiste on his win over me this week. And
best how gentlemanly of you.
Yeah. I know, like, I kind of grilled him about it last week. So I will say congratulations to him. It was a good win. He beat me handily, if you will. So far, beating me at least by 40 points. So a well-deserved win for him. Hopefully I can still make it into the playoffs where I will exact revenge. That's the right word, right?
Yes.
That's a word, like, sometimes people say, like, you extract revenge and you use the wrong expression.
Extract is the wrong one.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to slowly remove revenge from you.
It happens
in a methodical way.
That's like one of those things that you screw up. Like, it's a mute point. Yeah. Anyways, so that I think in the Nerd Appropriate Fantasy League, I think we just have one or two more weeks in the regular season, and then we move on to the playoffs, where hopefully I think the at least the working plan on paper is to somehow cobble together some awful trophy that the winner has to carry with them. And then it'll be a traveling trophy that travels to whoever whoever the winner is in subsequent years. So hopefully we can do that. We'll see.
Let's do it.
There you go. So I think with that, do we have any other business to conduct? I think we made it to the end.
That's it. We made it to the end.
So
our duo.
We do. I think what we can do at this point is preview what we're going to do next week. Now that the Xbox One is out, I picked up Rise, and I'm going to be taking a look at that. And then if I have the time, and I'll probably make the time, don't make any bones about this, I picked up A Link Between Worlds, which is the 3DS Legend of Zelda title that just came out. It's supposed to be the spiritual successor to the best game of all time, A Link to the Past.
Nice. It's getting reviewed very highly, so hopefully it's really good.
I am stoked. And when you say that it's the successor to the best game of all time, A Link to the Past, those are some pretty mighty stockings and boots that you have to fill.
It's kind of a shame that they put it on a handheld system, just saying.
Yeah, I mean, that is a little weird that they did that. Like, I don't really know. I mean, some of the... I mean, they did, like, Spirit Tracks and the Phantom Hourglass. So unless they just decided that the gameplay would really be conducive to that touchscreen, like, I don't really know. I don't know what the strategy there was, because they, on the Wii U, which, you know, admittedly is not doing well, they released just an HD remake of the Wind Waker. So who knows? Can't speculate. It's too confusing.
It is.
So what are you working on for next week?
Next week I'll be back and be talking about Battlefield 4 and Dead Rising 3.
You picked up Dead Rising 3?
Yeah, I picked it up.
Okay.
I was a fan of the first two games, so Dead Rising 3 and Battlefield, and who knows what else. But and hopefully next week we'll have other people on with us.
I know, right? We've really been like,
I mean,
scheduling, you
know,
and
yeah, hopefully everyone's here. But anyway, I guess we'll close things out. Thank you guys so much for listening to the Rated NA podcast. This has been episode 130. If you want to reach us, you can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can also go to Facebook, and that's /NerdAppropriate. Email us directly with whatever strange things you want to email us with us. And that is Ash, Scott, Matt, or Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. And we will be back next week with more exciting stuff.
And one last thing, now that I remember, this is probably most people will be listening to this for Thanksgiving, because this is Thanksgiving week. So from our family to your family, we will just say we hope you have a safe and happy Thanksgiving wherever your travels may take you. And we hope that maybe this will brighten up your flight or your drive in a little way for about an hour. And we'll catch you guys next week.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
See ya. You want me to start?
Sure, man. Do it. Cool.
Heyo, welcome to the Rated NA podcast. Nope.
Sorry, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, okay. Okay. We'll do something different.
Heyo.
Heyo.